Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 285, recorded Leap Day, February 29th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
You want to know a funny thing about Leap Day?
What?
Leap Year? I heard a crazy thing on the radio today that a family down in Payson, which is here in Utah, has three kids that... They're not triplets, but they all happen to be born on leap year, on February 29th on leap years.
Wow.
I know. They said it tied with, like, the world record or something.
That's crazy.
Three different kids, different years, different leap years, but they're all born on leap year on February 29th.
Did they plan that?
Nope. One of them was even 5 days overdue.
Wow. That's crazy.
It was pretty crazy.
Okay.
So I hope you all enjoyed your extra day.
Of the year.
If you're having a bad year, you probably didn't want it to be any longer. But if you're having a good year, maybe you wanted it to get stretched out.
Or maybe this is the best day of the rest of your life. Or the best day of the last part of your life, the rest of which will be even better.
I'm not even sure what that meant.
None of us are. Okay.
Speaking of measuring things, oh, I suppose I should tell you who's in the show today.
Yes, why don't we?
I'm sorry, and I've been sick too, so if my voice goes in and out, you'll just have to forgive me, because I can't do anything about it.
Yeah, sorry about last week. We were both sick.
And it's been a difficult couple of months.
It has.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So we have Matt in Perth, Western Australia, and Juliet in Paris, Devin in Portland, Oregon, Joshua in, Perth, Western. Have we heard from Joshua before? We have, or we have not.
I can't recall at this time.
Well, that's two today. Sorry. Okay, so we'll start with Matt. And he says, "G'day, Russ and Kelly. I have been thinking about measurements. The United States, Liberia, and Burma still use the imperial system. The rest of the world uses metric. The UK still has a few imperial measurements, but on the whole, they use metric. Let's take distance for an example. If I wanted to know how long my pencil is, my measurement would be in centimeters, centi meaning a hundredth of a meter. If I needed a more accurate measurement, it would be in millimeters, milli meaning a thousandth of a meter. Everything is nice and easy, base 10 mass. 1,000 millimeters to a meter, 100 centimeters to a meter, 1,000 meters to a kilometer, or kilometer, I guess different people say it different.
I prefer kilometer.
I do too. You don't need to be good at math to do quick conversion calculations in your head. Well, let's take the imperial system. The first unit is an inch. If I needed to know how many inches there are in 7 feet, I have to times 12 times 7 in my head. That is not easy. However, if I needed to know how many millimeters there are in 7 meters, that is easy. Just add three zeros. No need to memorize timetables. Although you should have them memorized anyways. As my fourth grade daughter will tell you, because she's been working very hard on memorizing them all year. So you should know them anyways. But that's beside the point. The next unit up from a foot is the yard. That's true, which I use a lot in sewing. 3 feet in a yard. You know that one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just lost my spot. Here we go. Okay, so say I need to know how many feet there are in a mile. There are 1,760 yards in a mile. 1,760 times 3 equals 5,280 feet. That is not memorable at all. Metric applies to the base 10 system. To liquid volume 2, there are 1,000 milliliters in a liter. We also apply it to weight measures. There are 1,000 grams in a kilogram. The whole system applies over all the measurements and just makes it much easier. The same is not true of imperial. There's one area that I think the imperial system does win, though, and that is referring to aquarium size. Saying my big tank is 6 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot is much nicer than saying it is 1.8 meters by 0.6 meters by 0.6 meters or 180 centimeters by 60 centimeters by 60 centimeters. On the whole, I think the imperial system should be phased out. This is what we are used to, and tradition is not a valid line of reasoning for keeping it. Do you know why the U.S. refuses to join the rest of the world in measuring? Are there advantages to it that I'm unaware of? I would say, not that I'm any person that's in any control of anything, of changing anything. Except, I don't know, like, maybe the water filter in the fridge. Probably because it would be a big, expensive mess to change everything. Street signs, educational materials, maps, blah, blah, blah.
Well, one thing you
I would cost millions and millions of dollars.
Is that if, even though I agree that the metric system is superior, I think switching to it is the difficulty in like what you said, but also because those of us who have grown up using the system we're used to, trying to change to a different system is just a little bit difficult. But I think one thing in the U.S., we have been switching slowly over. Most things that you buy at the store, for example, have both measurements on food, measurements of volume or weight or whatever. It will have both grams and or kilograms and pounds. Or if it's liquid, you know, it'll have liters and quarts or whatever. We're in a transition
Probably because
phase.
Most food is shipped also internationally.
Well, and that may be part of it as well. Mm-hmm. But the transition is happening in school, in fact.
They teach it more.
They even when I was a kid, they were teaching. Mm-hmm. You had to learn centimeters and millimeters and
kilometers and kilograms. Yeah, we do them both. It's just official measurements. Or
yeah, you had to learn them in school, but we didn't use them as much outside of school.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's slowly changing. I think eventually it'll just
be phased anything out. You know, scientific is done in the metric system.
Right, that's true.
And they all sneer their noses at people who don't use it. I think that's my main issue with switching over to the metric system, because often when people tell someone else that they need to change something, they do it with a snotty attitude, and then it just makes me dig my heels, and I'm like, fine, I'm not going to change just because you're being a snot.
Yeah.
But that's just me. Not that Matt's being a snot.
No.
I just get stubborn that way.
So, yeah, I think it is a good reason, and I can't think of any particularly good reason to keep it beyond what we already said, which is just that it would be hard to change
because it's a change. It would cost a lot of money.
Yeah, logistically getting it done would be difficult. Mm-hmm. But
I will say, from my own stupid sentimental point of view, it's kind of like what in Utah, there aren't so many street names. It's almost like a metric system for addresses. When they came, you know, there weren't, I don't know, for lack of a better, European-style cities or anything. I mean, they're obviously indigenous tribes, but there weren't cities, and so they started them from the ground up. They picked a center of the city, and they just worked in a grid system. So 100 blo- you know, one block east of the center was 100 east. 10 blocks south of the center was 1,000 south. And so it's kind of, you know, it's grid coordinates, basically. So it's easier to get around without directions or a map, but it lacks personality. And it's easier, you know, I'm used to it now, and so it makes sense. And it's nice to be able to just get where you're going, but it does totally lack charm and personality.
And it was also done in such a way that it's not a perfect grid system, because you do have streets that are only known by the street names.
Yeah, mostly the more recent, like, housing developments and stuff that aren't on a grid. Not that it has anything, you know, any bearing on any official decisions that will ever be made, but it feels cozier to go into the fabric store and ask for 3 yards of something than 3 meters.
Well, shall we on to his next paragraph?
Eh? Yes. He says, on to more aquarium-related matters. I bought some macroalgae, a fighting snail, and 4 peppermint shrimp from my marine aquarium. The fighting snail sure looks like a cone snail. Growing up in Australia, most wildlife are trying to kill us. Cone snails are venomous and can easily kill a human. They decided to harpoon us, fitting the stereotype. However, my fighting snail is peaceful. It only fights other male snails if you have multiple in the tank. It sifts through the sand and is doing a good job at disturbing the red cyanobacteria growing on the sand's surface. The macroalgae are designed to absorb some of the phosphates, thus reducing my algal problems. I am not sure if that is working yet, although the algae seems to be doing all right. I got the shrimp to eat my aptasia. That's good. I have noticed less aptasia since I put them in the aquarium. Shrimps tend to be sensitive to water changes, and I was a little unsure if they would survive, but I did the drip acclimatization.
acclimatization.
Sorry, acclimatization method, and it all worked out. I have to say, nanomarine aquariums are certainly a battle. Yeah. It's true.
You know, we had cone snails in Hawaii, too.
Oh, we did?
I remember seeing a few, collecting a few shells on the beach, but also I remember seeing them while snorkeling a couple times, I think. Where was it? Shark's Cove, I think I saw a few
there. Well, that makes sense. All kinds of pokey things in Shark's Cove.
Yep. And let's see. What was the other thing? We had a peppermint shrimp years ago when we had our marine tank.
To eat the Aptasias.
And did a great job, too.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember what his name was.
Pepe.
Oh, I'm not a shrimp.
I'm a king prawn. Okay.
Yeah, you guys should go see that. Okay. He says, I did a big water change and filter clean on the 6-foot aquarium. I hate cleaning out the filter on the big aquarium. The filter is heavy and likes to make noises. As such, it is frequently annoying me that it won't do its job quietly. Do you have any part of maintenance that you put off and really dislike? The less enjoyable a maintenance task is, the less likely it will actually happen. I've heard about refugiums designed to do all the work of a filter for marine aquariums. Do such systems exist for freshwater aquariums? That'd be cool. I'd much prefer to just harvest some plants every so often. What would be even cooler is if you could find an herb or a vegetable that grows voraciously underwater and won't release anything toxic into the water. Or perhaps the water could go through the root system in an aquaponics-style setup. The real problem would be growth rate. It has to grow fast enough to counter any nutrient buildup. I always thought of aquaponics as an outdoor situation, but you could easily have it going into your cabinet with the correct lighting. That would be the other trick. Finding a plant that can grow on LED lighting, and the LED lights won't use up lots of energy. In marine refugiums, the light is left on 24 hours a day. This allows for maximum growth. I would do the same with the cabinet aquaponics. Well, this has been a fun thought experiment. Not sure how far I will actually pursue it, but it sure sounds much nicer than lugging around a heavy, loud filter. Matt from Perth, Western Australia.
Well, filter maintenance is probably one of my least...
you love it.
No, I
yeah,
don't
Yeah, oh
like
no, just the other day you were waxing poetic about jammed impalers and...
Impalers or impellers?
Same thing!
Sometimes, I suppose. Oh, yeah.
You hate it.
I don't really like cleaning filters out much. I like doing water changes more than I like doing filters. So, there you go. So I'm right with you on that one. But it's true, freshwater refugiums, they do exist. I've heard of people building veggie filters where they have a sump that's full of plants in their cabinet. So it's done. People do it. I don't know if they ever do away with water changes because of it. Of course, that's the whole idea behind aquaponics. So that is another version of the setup, just like you mentioned. Would that... The aquaponics place that we went to, they were growing kale was their main crop, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was kale.
I think so.
And it grows fast.
They just would sell it all off at the farmer's market, so it was making the money.
Yeah. And they were... So
you could grow kale and sell it at a farmer's market and have your aquariums make you money.
I think they supplied some stores, too.
Did they really?
I think is what they said.
They were
growing a lot. They grew a lot of kale. But it's one of those vegetables that grows really fast.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the deal is that because it is it's the root system, like you mentioned, Matt, so they're benefiting from the atmospheric CO2 once again. So CO2 is not a limiting factor in the growth. But interesting stuff. I still want to do that sometime on a fairly large scale, some sort of aquaponics thing. It'd be fun.
It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Okay, shall we go on to Juliet?
Mm-hmm.
She says, Hi, Russ and Kelly. As I said in my last email, my newly arrived Boreas brigitae developed ick, and being in a tank with shrimp, my first solution was to bring the temperature up to 86 degrees Fahrenheit, or 30 degrees Celsius, and dose with salt. It even hit 32 degrees Celsius, or 89 degrees Fahrenheit, from time to time, which is supposed to kill ick outright. After 6 days, there was absolutely no change. The same spots were in the same places, and one fish started developing a pale patch along his dorsal muscle that looked like a bacterial infection of his tissues. I caught the whole lot up, including the pygmy corys, who seemed untouched, and put them in the new beta tank. He had also picked up the ick, probably because when I moved him I had used the same net that was wet for moving the boreas. Bad, mad mistake, I usually know better. I upped that tank to 30, but this time used Punctol Ultra medication, as corys and betas and probably boreas do not like salt much. The shrimp tank has gradually been lowered back to a decent temperature and the salt taken out by daily water changes. There will be no ick left in this tank because no fish will have been in it for over a week. After 3 doses of Punctol given every second day after a water change, all the fish seemed clear, and I was looking forward to moving them back to their original tank. I did have to put down the one with the patch as it could barely swim and seemed to be slowly dying in a horrible way. But today, 2 of the fish have 2 new spots. Maybe they're old spots, but I don't think so. What to do? I didn't expect it to resist the high temperatures, to take so long to leave the fish and to reappear despite the medication. It is ick, no doubt about that. Do I keep dosing Punctol every 2 days until it's gone? Meds are pretty hard on fish, and I am worried about the corys. Is it risky putting the unspotted fish back in their shrimp tank? They're all super lively, well-colored, not flashing. How long is this going to last? Their hospital tank is not big. The beta is confined to one of the breeder basket things in a corner as he is a bully and tries to eat the boreas. I am now convinced he killed my maras. I do not want them penned like this for too long, but it would be even worse to have them come down with ick again. What should I do?
And I responded to Juliet about this, and I said, basically, yeah, it would be worse to have them come down with it again. And it may be that the cysts had already, you know, burrowed into the fish, but not become visible cysts yet before the medication got to them. So,
you mean the ones that showed up afterwards?
Right, because the little spots you see on the ick is a certain life stage. There's a free-swimming stage, and then there's a stage that it burrows into the fish, and then it starts, once it gets there, starts forming a cyst.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be that it had burrowed in, but hadn't formed a visible cyst yet. And so they're showing up because they weren't at the vulnerable free-swimming stage when the medicine started. And of course, the heat speeds up the whole process, but some of them could be slower than others and whatnot. So I suggested she just keep going, like she was saying, as one of her options. Keep dosing, keep them in the tank. Where they are, and I said, that's what I would do, and she said, I agree. And so we'll hear a little later from her what happened.
Hopefully it worked.
Yeah, we'll hear later from her, because she responded a little later about what had happened.
Oh, we have another one from her later. Okay. In the meantime, we'll go to Devin in Portland, Oregon. Devin says, hi, Russ and Kelly, I've been cultivating a planted tank recently that's recently started to do decently.
I like
Okay,
that.
Do we have a rhyming award?
I don't know, but we should now.
Or just it falls trippingly
like
off your
recently,
tongue?
Recently, decently. I like it.
It's got bombas, wisterias, Amazon swords, duckweed, and a couple of unidentified plants. I'm dosing it using, is that EL or is that EI?
EI for estimated index.
Sometimes different fonts, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, it's true. It's estimated index.
Okay.
What it stands for.
So the EI method, though I'm dialing back the nitrate dosing a bit, excuse me. I'm going to try that again. I'm dialing back the nitrate dosing a bit because my tank has traditionally been high for that. My parameters have been decent. Ammonia and nitrates staying at 0 nitrates since I added the shrimp have been 5 to 15 parts per million.
So the first nitrates was actually nitrates.
Was that supposed to? Okay, that makes more sense. pH tends to be a little high, around 7.6-ish. I purchased 8 Amano shrimp recently, and they've almost all died. There's one I still see swimming around, munching away at the algae. I've also pest snails that I assume hitched a ride on one of the plants. The wisteria and the Amazon are not doing too hot, but the other plants seem to be doing fine.
He's got a picture here.
It's a big picture. Oh, that's okay.
Okay.
So let's go
So
back.
I asked him a question about this tank, and I said, I asked him a few questions about the shrimp and about so on, various things about what he was doing, and he answered, and so this is him, his follow-up. Because I asked him first, were the shrimp the only fauna in the tank?
And he said yes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the shrimp. He says, I got the shrimp last Saturday, and they've been slowly going since. I lost two or three that same night. This afternoon, I couldn't find the last one, but I saw them yesterday night.
Yeah, and I asked him if they had all died at once, or that they were slowly dropping off. And then I asked him if the shrimp were showing signs of stress.
He said, I'm not familiar with shrimp stress signs, though a quick Google suggests it's frantic swimming constantly, which I didn't see a lot of. Most of them are walking on the wood or plants, with one exception that I saw.
Okay. And I asked him if he had dosed any medication in that tank.
He said he hadn't put anything in besides the fertilizer, CO2, and the water conditioner.
And then he said...
Again, a little bit later, he sent another update, and he said, as a quick update, there is still at least one shrimp swimming around as of 2 minutes ago. Also, the tank runs a little warm at 80 degrees, and I'm considering dropping that to 78.
Yep. And that might be helpful. I thought that could be good, even though it's not necessarily going to cause a big problem for the shrimp. I think being a little cooler could be helpful. So hopefully, things look up.
Was that mainly the issue that you were thinking it was?
Just no, the not necessarily. I'm still a little bit puzzled about what it might be. I mean, it could be something, the CO2 fluctuation, if, because you're dosing CO2, does the CO2 fluctuate between night and day? Because that could certainly be enough to do it. I didn't think to ask that before, but if you take a reading of CO2 before the lights go on in the morning, and then take one after the lights have been on, a lot of times CO2 at night, if it's running at the same rate during the night, it will it can cause the pH to dip quite a bit, because there aren't the plants to be using the CO2, and therefore the pH drops. So depending on the type of CO2 dosing you're using and whether or not it's a 24-hour dose, you know, a lot of times it's not a big deal. I've had plenty of tanks where I'm running do-it-yourself CO2, and I let it run 24/7. But do-it-yourself CO2 is not the same thing as, like, you know, injected CO2. Concentration can be a lot higher. So, something to think about. All right, now let's go back to Juliet. I'm sorry that the order of this is a little bit weird. I probably should have thought this out a little better when I was organizing things, but there you go.
Well, it's been a crazy time. So she wrote back and said, the borerass are back in their tank ache-free, and the shrimp are thriving. You can even see one of the pygmy cores in a lot of ram's horns. You can post it if you like. It's not per picture she's talking about, but
yeah.
Yep, you can see them. Yay!
See,
in
there's
the picture.
A little corey right there.
And lots of shrimps.
Yep. And so this is after she decided to do like we were talking about and just let it stay in the tank with the dosing for a little longer, and she did, keeping in mind that these emails have been coming in over the past 2 weeks. So
it's been a little bit of time. I'm glad they're doing better. That is a good thing.
It is indeed a good thing.
Okay. This guy wasn't even in our list. You forgot to put him on the
Joshua
list.
Oh, that's Joshua from Perth, West.
You have question marks here. That's why.
Yep. Sorry. It's because I didn't know initially where Joshua was from, and I asked him, and I hadn't gotten back to find the question marks. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so back to Australia. Joshua says, "Hey guys, I'm relatively new to the. You know what? How big is Perth?
I don't know.
Is it like?
Never been there.
L.A., Salt Lake. You and Matt should meet up and talk fish." Have a fish meetup. Okay. Says, I'm relatively new to the aquarium hobby and have had a guppy... Is that a brown placo?
Bristlenose.
Oh, bristlenose. Oh, I should know that. BN. Bristlenose placo, Cory tank running for about 2 months now, and I'm having a horrible problem with what I believe to be blackbeard algae. Oh, that's so evil. That's nasty stuff.
It is.
He sent us some pictures of it on his plants in his tank. Where's the rest of his email?
You know what? He sent it, but it didn't come through. Because I asked him where he was from, because I didn't know before, and he responded and said, by the way, did you get the rest of my email? There was a lot more of it than this.
Oh, it didn't.
I said, no, unfortunately, we didn't.
Okay, but
get
so
it
we're
all.
Just talking about what to do about blackbeard algae,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, talk about that.
Okay.
But let's see if. I'm just going to hop back for a second and see if it's popped up on my email. Since the rest of it, because that was a while ago, but I don't think it has. It's just worth a try, though.
I always feel like we've had issues with emails lately.
Yeah, there have been some issues with it.
I'm not sure what's going on with that.
Blackbeard algae is a scary thing. I really don't like it. I've had run-ins with it. It's been a few years since I've had any significant issues with it, but actually it's been a long time, isn't it?
It has.
Since Isaac was like a toddler. So it's been a long time, but I have had problems with it.
And it's wicked and naughty.
Yeah, it can be terrible stuff. So one thing that you can do, look into Flourish, Seachem Flourish Excel as a treatment. Sometimes that has been used successfully. Do a little research on that, maybe on some of the forums, and see what is suggested there. But it can be something that will help fight it off. Another thing to think about is hydrogen peroxide. You can look at some treatment regimens that people have used with that. So those are both ideas. Now, you may want to think about Siamese algae eaters.
But don't keep them for too long, because they're mean.
Yeah, once they get older, it can be bad. Mm. Okay, I take it back. I've had some slight problems with it more recently, although it has been a few years.
Oh, what tank?
Because not here, and not for a few years, but we had our Siamese algae eaters partly to fight off the black bearded algae.
Oh,
so
that's true. I was just thinking about it.
It was a while ago. It was a few years ago, but it wasn't so long ago that Isaac was a baby, really, because... I was just thinking of the worst problems I had with it initially.
Mm-hmm. That was an orb.
That was a really long time ago. But then later I had minor issues with it, but used Siamese algae eaters to help fight it off and Amano shrimp, because they'll sometimes eat a little bit of it too. Anyway, those are some things to think about. And also, I think you're right, that probably is what it is, but... look up staghorn algae too, because it can look a little bit like it, and I'm not sure from the pictures, so take a look at that. They often grow in very different conditions, but it's worth to look at that just to make sure that's what you've got, the blackbeard algae, although I'm pretty sure that is what it is based on your pictures. So Seachem Flourish Excel, hydrogen peroxide are some things to look into, and they may help you with the problem. Just do your research carefully, though, because people can put anything on the internet, but you can get some ideas about what people have done using those. And I think what I ended up doing the first time, and this was years ago before I knew a whole lot about what I was doing, is I just did a bunch of manual removal and I actually bleached my gravel, which was...
A desperate
measure at the time, but this was like 15 years ago, and I wasn't quite sure what I was doing. It did work to an extent, because I never, once I finally got rid of it, I was much more careful with bio load and much more conscientious with water changes. And of course, though I had to recycle tanks, I ended up getting it under control. And since then, when I have dealt with it, it's been much smaller quantities. And actually, looking at your tank, although, you know, you do have some algae growth there, I wouldn't say it's a horrible problem yet, because it can get worse. So hopefully it gets better before it gets worse, and then it doesn't get worse at all.
I hope so.
Right. So, let's see.
Is that everybody?
I think that's everybody for this week.
Okey-dokey.
So hopefully that helps. And until next week...
May the fish...
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that can be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.